sit there with her and have her say how appreciative she is to be able to laugh was just so profound.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Life, a podcast brought to you by LifePath. Donation can be a complicated subject, but it is really all about life. Spend a few minutes as we unravel the complexities of donation. Let's talk about life.
I'm so excited for this episode because we are celebrating something incredibly special. The 10-year opening of Transplant House of Cleveland. Now, if you're not already aware of the Transplant House of Cleveland, it is a nonprofit that provides affordable and temporary housing with a very welcoming and supportive community for those who are traveling to Cleveland to receive care for organ transplantation, whether that's prior to a transplant or after. And of course, their family members who are with them. We could not be happier to say happy 10th anniversary to Transplant House of Cleveland. Hi, you're listening to episode 153 of Let's Talk About Life. I'm your host, Colleen Gerber, kidney recipient and LifeBank staff member. We have two wonderful people here and good friends from Transplant House of Cleveland. To join me on this episode, Elaine Turley, who is not only the executive director, but the co-founder of Transplant House of Cleveland, along with Aaron Babcock, their manager of communications and the annual fund. Elaine and Aaron, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, yeah, thank you for having us.
I'm excited. We work so closely together. It almost feels like you're just part of LifeBank and LifeBank is just part of you guys.
We agree.
Yeah. Elaine, I'm going to start with you. As the co-founder, can you give our listeners a little bit of history about Transplant House of Cleveland? But then also, why is this such a project of passion for you?
Certainly. Thank you for asking that. And sort of puts a lump in my throat to think back on the 10 years that Transplant House has been open and operational. And the history is, you know, very simply, there's been a need. Even at that 10 years ago, there had been a need in Cleveland for a very long time to provide some affordable housing for people that come for organ transplant, either at the Cleveland Clinic or University Hospital. My passion behind this comes from the fact that my father received a liver transplant at the Cleveland Clinic in 1992, and it was a very successful surgery, but he had some unique rejection, and the Cleveland Clinic sent him to Omaha, Nebraska Medical Center to get the immunosuppressant that's now Andert issue, but at that time it was still in the final stages of FDA approval. So that's where you could get it. So he and my mom went out there. They ended up being in Omaha for 6 weeks. And they got to stay in special transplant housing. And I got to experience the relief that it not only brought them, but brought me way back here in Ohio, when I learned that they had a safe and affordable place to stay. And best of all, is they were meeting people that understood this journey and the complexity of it. And they made friends there that they kept for many, many years after. So my parents came back and said to the social worker and others at the Cleveland Clinic, you know, you really need to offer something similar. So the idea for Transplant House was born in the mid-90s. And as these things go, sometimes it takes a while to get there. But we were thrilled to open our doors in July of 2014. And, you know, we were able to do it because we had the support of people from both hospitals from the very beginning. Art Thompson, who was the administrator at the Cleveland Clinic Transplant Center at that time, was a huge internal advocate for, you know, solving this problem. And he introduced me to Erica Miller, wife of Dr. Charles Miller. And off we went and quickly recruited board members from both hospitals that really validated the need for this housing. So, yeah, we've been at it for 10 years. And believe me, it's been a lifesaver for some guests, certainly a huge gift to many guests. and amazing for those of us that have been here for all those years to see it be more than we even dreamed it would be.
Yeah, I also remember the beginning and, you know, how hard you worked. And it was really grassroots efforts, fundraising, cocktail parties, and those kinds of things to where we are today. And wow, it's just a blink of an eye that 10 years went by.
I agree. It's a little scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, actually. Erin, I'm going to ask you, when did you land at Transplant House? And I'm assuming it's a little different than any other job you've had, but what's your favorite part of it?
Yes, so it is very different than any other job I had. I arrived at Transplant House in October of 2021. I had been in education before this. I was a teacher and a researcher for a long time. So this was a change for me, and the world of transplant was new to me. But I felt a connection to Transplant House the second I read the job posting in the mission statement. I knew this was where I wanted to be. And I think, you know, there's a couple things about working here that I really like. There's a real sense of a shared mission and shared purpose here for all the staff and volunteers. You know, we're all working towards the same goal, which is providing our patient, caregiver, guests with a place that feels like home, that feels safe, and where there's a strong support network when they need it. And my work is about sharing the reality of transplant, the challenges families face, and the miraculous gifts that they're given, that organ donation provides for them. And so it's part storytelling, part advocacy awareness raising for transplant more broadly. And it's about putting a face to this experience, too, for those who don't have a direct experience with transplant and who don't really understand maybe all the complexity of transplant. So, you know, a lot of my work is storytelling. My favorite part about that is sitting down with guest families to talk about their lives. I learn about more than just their transplant experience, too, which I really love. You know, I learn about where they grew up, their passions, their hobbies, what they're looking forward to getting back to now that they've had a transplant. You know, how they met their spouse, all those things that make up a life and really emphasize what it is that organ donation gives back to families, provides them a second chance at all those things.
You see living examples of the power of organ donation every single day.
Absolutely. And they're so grateful for it, too. And that's another part of the storytelling that comes through to me is just how grateful they are for the gift they've been given. And, you know, so many of them say things like, I'm still here for a reason and I have some purpose that I have to fulfill. And there's this real sense that they want to give back. So it's not just about gratitude, but giving back because of this gift they've been given. And, you know, I've interviewed a couple living donors that have stayed with us too. And they said the same thing that, you know, it's the most meaningful thing they've ever done in their lives was to give the gift of a second chance to somebody else. And it's just amazing to hear these stories. It's really meaningful to be entrusted with these experiences too.
How beautiful. Elaine, do you have any idea of how many guests that Transplant House has hosted over that 10 years?
We do, thanks to a good database. We have served 1,668 distinct families. So some of those families have come multiple times. You know, they may have been here during the evaluation phase before listing. They may have been here waiting for an organ to come, and many were here, you know, following transplant, recovering before they can go all the way home. So over 1,600 families, and keep in mind, we have 25 apartments now, so we have 25 families at once, but in the beginning, we only had 7, and we grew in stages. So yeah, 10 years from now, that number will be significantly larger. And that equals over 62,000 nights of housing. Almost 63,000 nights of housing. And, you know, something worth mentioning that would really make impact to our listeners is knowing that by staying here, we're saving families when you factor the nightly fee, the parking fee, and the taxes, both sales and lodging tax. You know, we're saving $140 a night. And so in our 10 years, that's $8.7 million
saved. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But if you put it into more realistic terms, our average length of stay right now is typically 35 nights or so. So we're saving those families almost $5,000 on that little over 1 month stay. I mean, that's a significant amount of money for any one of us. And a very common stay, particularly for our lung patients, is about 4 months. And so we're saving them $16,800.
Wow.
And when you start doing that math, you realize that this makes the difference between getting a transplant and not getting one for some families.
Absolutely. And transplant happens to be one of those protocols that require an awful lot of maintenance. So, you know, immunosuppressants, blood tests, often consistent visits to specialists. And so those dollars are really, really meaningful to those families.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot of guests that you've hosted. Are there any that come to mind that were a highlight or just stick in your mind for a reason?
So many. They do. And the families, there's such a diversity of families and stories here. And, you know, interestingly, sometimes when guests stop and engage us in just casual conversation in the course of a day, they'll tell their story, and then quite often they'll pause and say, oh, but you hear this story all the time. And I always say, no, we don't. We hear stories all the time, but they are all so unique because the family configuration is unique and the diagnosis is unique, et cetera. So the only common thing at the core is either a transplant or a hope for a transplant. But I have a guest in particular that I talk about a lot, in part because I've stayed in touch with her. And her name is Katie, and she came to us 8.5 years ago. She lived in Chicago, and she was maybe 33 at the time. And she had lived with cystic fibrosis all her life and had taken very good care of herself and had the standard of care for cystic fibrosis at that time. But she just had a period of time where she started to decline. And I think her doctors knew that this day would come for her. So she was flown to Cleveland to be worked up for a lung transplant, which thankfully she did receive. Both of her parents initially flew in from Oklahoma, at the time. And her dad had to go back to work, but he was so relieved to meet all of us and see the apartment and know that his wife, Kathy, would be fine here. And then when Katie got discharged post-transplant, she was with us too. And they were here for a total of 5 months. And one thing that sticks out in my mind is when I met Katie for the first time post-transplant, she talked about walking, she said, up the hill from Starbucks to here. And I just paused and thought, I never realized that was a hill because it's really just a slight incline. Mm. But she said, I didn't used to be able to walk up a hill like that. And she said, I did it easily now with my new lungs.
Oh.
They were here over Thanksgiving. And she talked about sitting around the Thanksgiving table and doing storytelling and laughing and laughing and laughing. And she said, pre-transplant, I suppressed laughter as much as possible because she said it would send me into a fit of coughing that I just couldn't stop. So to sit there with her and have her say how appreciative she is to be able to laugh was just so profound. And she has gone on to live a life of gratitude for all those little things and big things too. And the reason I love to tell her story is she, post-transplant, she got married and they wanted to have children, she and Jerome. And her doctors had always said that she shouldn't carry a pregnancy because of all her medications
and
her condition, even though she's healthy. So they did in vitro fertilization, and they had 2 fertilized eggs. And a lifelong friend had always said, if you ever want to carry a baby, I will carry it for you. Mm-hmm. So they had a baby born and then quickly found another surrogate, just sort of by fluke, I think, or good fortune. And decided to implant the egg in a second surrogate who was a stranger to her. And that egg, by fluke, very rare occurrence, split. And so they had identical twins in the second pregnancy. And these babies were born within 2 months of each other.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And they are the cutest little girls. They're 2.5 now. And they look like triplets. And she, on her social media in the beginning, used to say, hashtag kind of like triplets. Yeah, the joy. And they welcomed family to come. They live in Florida now, and they have family that live right nearby. And so it's a family affair raising these three little girls. But she's 8.5 years post-transplant now and has been back here for our 5K and came back and visited me last fall, actually. So it's just such a fabulous story, you know, because of the gift of life. Their lives just keep on giving. You can't not love this family.
Absolutely. And three more lives were created, right?
Yes. Yes. Oh, and they're advocates for organ donation. And she's very open about sharing her story with others. And believe me, when you have three little girls that look like triplets, people stop you a lot and talk to you. So she shares her story broadly. And if I can share one other, Colleen.
Sure, is that absolutely.
Okay. Because this is so different. And it's a story of a living donor, liver. So the donor was Doug, and the recipient, his name is Mark. They're both from West Virginia, and they were total strangers. And the reason this happened is Doug is a pastor, and a young woman in his congregation came to him and said, "I'm wondering if you will think with me through a decision I'm trying to make." She said, "I want to be a living donor of a part of my liver to a man I know who needs a liver to survive." And as she told her story, he said, "Look, if God puts something on your heart, I'm not going to change it." But, you know, he reinforced with her, she's got some risk situation of her own in that she wouldn't be paid for the time off from her job. And she was a single mom with a very young child. And, you know, he kind of left the meeting saying, "Power to ya," you know. But he said, literally, as he drove home, he thought, "Wait a minute. I'll get paid if I'm on medical leave. And I've already had my family. My kids are grown and gone." He talked himself into offering himself as the living donor and was perfectly content to do it anonymously. But as it turned out, they did meet. And both men stayed here, different apartments, with their wives. Both of the wives were named Brenda, by the way. And so we had the great privilege of seeing their friendship blossom here while they both recovered from the surgery. And Doug and I actually went on local news, told the story, and the cameramen on the TV station were crying when we left. They were so moved by his act of love for a stranger.
It gives you hope and humanity. There is positivity out there and wonderful people still out there.
And that's exactly it. I couldn't say it any better.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I bet Aaron has a favorite family too.
I was just going to ask if there was a guest that comes to mind, Aaron.
Absolutely. The first family I ever sat down with, and this must have been only a few weeks after I started here, were Mike and Melissa, and they're from New York State. Mike is a double lung recipient, and he and Melissa have been coming to Transplant House since 2017 when he first received his transplant, and they come back frequently for checkups and things, so they're very familiar with the house. And in the course of all these things, they really came to see this place as a second home, and for me, I think they really embody the spirit of Transplant House and what we try to create here, which is this strong sense of community and a strong sense of home and being a part of a larger community while they're here. And both of them take very seriously now the role that they've kind of assigned themselves as resources for other guests, talking to other guests about their experience, especially those who are much earlier on in the stage of their transplant journey. But what really struck me when I first met them, and this is something I've noticed in a lot of the families I've spoken to, is how much they care for the other guests that they meet here. Even in the middle of this really challenging medical experience that's stressful, it's frightening, it's in being in a new city, you know, they were concerned for the other families that they met here and the friends they made here. You know, another caregiver I spoke to recently was here with her husband, who's also a double lung recipient, put it best when she said, you know, that we all worry about one another here. And Mike and Melissa, they made lifelong friends while they were here. They became close with a couple from California, Liz and Jerry, who were here for a liver transplant for Jerry. Melissa first met in the laundry room. They're doing laundry together. And Melissa says, you know, we were best friends while we were here from that moment on. And, you know, they hosted one of their for meals in their apartment. So there's this really sense of ownership too while they're here, right? That they invite people into their, you know, what is their home away from home while they're here. And I was really struck by that. And, you know, before we ended our conversation, I remember Melissa saying to me very earnestly, she said, "Now you're a part of our family." And I had just met her 45 minutes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that really, I think, speaks to how much she and Mike believe in caring for other guests here, and it also speaks to how much the guests really contribute to making this place a community. You know, we create the conditions, but it's the guests who make it happen. And they were definitely one of those families who really embody that for me.
Yeah, and how important. I mean, if you think about it, if somebody stays in a hotel, they're really isolated. And the beautiful byproduct of Transplant House is that, you know, just as you said, a community is formed, but there is support. Caregivers support other caregivers. Recipients support those who are waiting for a transplant or another fellow recipient. It's an amazing circle that keeps giving all the way through the process. I love it.
Mm-hmm. And it's so meaningful for someone who is earlier on the journey to see someone post-transplant and to hear from them that things can get better, that you can go back to having a more normal life after that experience. It's really heartening for them.
Yes.
To see that.
Yeah, and for caregivers to meet other caregivers and be able to look at each other and say, yeah, this is hard on us too.
You know? Right. Right.
Yeah, the expectations of those caregivers are very high, and, you know, it's personal sacrifice for them as well. And we have guests here who are being supported by friends. They don't have a parent or a spouse, and they have friends that make the commitment to support them through this. It's just amazing, but they need support too. And that's where our social worker and just the friend peers really come into play.
Wow, what a gift. You know, Elaine, I mentioned earlier, it almost seems like Transplant House is part of Life Bank, and Life Bank is part of Transplant House. Can you explain how Life Bank and Transplant House works together?
We work together like a well-fitting glove, it feels like, or as I said before, it's the perfect marriage of missions, with Life Bank being on the donor side and the organ recovery side, and Transplant House being on the recipient or people who hope to receive on that side. The missions mesh together so well. And looking back 10 years, actually more than 10 years, Gordon Bowman became affiliated with us and joined our board a year or two before we actually opened. So somewhere around 2012 or 2013, he joined our board, and he immediately made a challenge grant to us. So he said, if you raise $10,000 from new donors, not existing donors, but from new donors this year, Life Bank will match it and give you $10,000. And he made that pledge for 5 years. And he was a wise man because he knew it was important for us to always be looking for new donors. And we were a brand new nonprofit, and I was brand new executive director. And so he was teaching us good practices for development work. So there's been the financial support, and that has continued every year, which is a huge gift. But to have Gordon's connections on the board, and now we have other Life Bank people on our board and on our committees, is huge for spreading the word and being in touch with the transplant community. We've also had Life Bank staff serve as volunteers in a number of capacities. At our gala last spring, Aaron was well supported at the registration table by Life Bank staff, who stayed through the whole evening and were a huge help. Maybe the most meaningful Life Bank volunteerism for me was when call center staff come here with a dinner and sit and eat with our guests. And the reason it's meaningful to me is they field those calls. That's the whole purpose of your call center staff. You know, when there has been a death, and managing that first part of the triaging and determining if this person is a potential donor or not, and to have that be your universe, and then to come here and see the life-giving result of their work is just, it completes the circle. And it's meaningful for them to meet our guests, but it's very meaningful for our guests to develop an awareness of who is it behind the scenes that's making all this happen that saved my life. So that's huge. Alyssa and Dina from your Donor Family Care Center have come here multiple times to do workshops with our guests around writing a thank you letter to your donor's family. That's always very moving. And of course, they hit on the, you know, how to deal with your emotions of having received that gift of life. And we've done, thanks to Gordon, we've done other things that are very behind the scenes that a lot wouldn't know about. You know, early on as a new startup nonprofit, Gordon had his finance team helping us with payroll and bookkeeping. So that was huge because we didn't have a staff that could do that. And LifeBank's always at our 5K and always supporting it and always at our gala. And as I was able to share at our gala this spring when we honored Gordon, he has been a mentor to me always, as early as this morning when we were exchanging emails. and that's been a very big gift. So yeah, we're partners forever, Colleen.
And I loved what you said, that our missions mesh so well. They do. And I think we give back to each other. You know, I think you're able to see the donor side of things. And especially our folks in the call center are able to physically see the results of their work. And what's better than that? So I've always been so proud of our association with Transplant House of Cleveland. It's just such a special relationship. And I just know that it's meaningful for our staff as well.
Feeling go both ways and how fortunate we are. You know, LifeBank is top performing OPO in the country and has stellar staff behind it, and we get to ride on the coattails of that at times. But it's more than that, it's wonderful convergence of people as well. So yes, thank you.
Yes, I agree. Erin, you're also the manager of the annual fund, and I just want to give you an opportunity to share what that's about. And if someone wants to contribute to that annual fund, how they would go about doing so.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that, Colleen. Yeah, so anyone can contribute to our annual fund. We welcome and are grateful for any contributions that are made. They can visit our website, www.transplanthouseofcleveland.org, and they can learn more about how to give. Our annual fund makes it possible for everything you've heard us both talk about over the course of this episode. You know, it makes it possible for us to provide an affordable place for guests to stay. It means that our apartments, when guests arrive, are stocked with everything they need, you know, cleaning supplies, laundry supplies, kitchenware, all that stuff, so they don't have to go out and shop for these things, bedding, towels, all that provided. The annual fund allows us to have Tuesday breakfast where guests have a chance to meet. They not only get a meal, but they get to meet one another. We also have, you know, our on-staff transplant social worker, Annette, who Elaine mentioned, who does invaluable work here supporting our guests. She helps them address financial challenges, navigate the hospitals, and also deal with the emotional strains that come with being a caregiver or a patient. So every dollar contributed keeps this community thriving, and it ensures that none of our guests face transplant alone, that they're always supported the entire time. And we are currently celebrating our 10-year anniversary with a fundraiser. Every supporter who gives a gift has the opportunity to write a message of encouragement to our guests that will be displayed in the common areas of our apartments. So we're doing that right now, and that information is on our website too. So if they'd like to give a gift and some encouraging words, that is an option. So we appreciate all of that from our supporters.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. How great to be able to give a word of encouragement to those in the process of transplant, but also to support your efforts. I think that's obviously the more important thing. You know, we've said this a million times, Elaine, that Transplant House of Cleveland is a home away from home. And it really is. Not only, you know, the beds, the sheets, the silverware, the cleaning supplies, but it's that built-in family, people who understand what you're going through and are there to give you a hug when you need one, you know, to lift you up and encourage you when you've had a bad day, and to celebrate with you when you've had a great day. So that's just absolutely family right there.
It is. You're not kidding.
Well, no. I thank you both for not only your time talking with me today, but for your efforts and the blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into the last 10 years to make Transplant House such a warm and wonderful place that it is. And congratulations. And I wish we all had a glass of champagne because we would cheers to another 10, 20, 30 years ahead. So thank you guys, and keep on doing the good work you do.
Thank you, Colleen, and thanks for being on the journey with us.
Yes, thank you. And you keep on doing the good work you're doing too.
So right back. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk About Life. If you have questions about today's podcast, reach out to us at info@lifebank.org. Take a few minutes to do something heroic and register to be an organ donor by saying yes at lifebank.org. Literally, someone's life is depending on it.